What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
This is breaking news.
Oh.
And I don't have... Do we have sponsors? Can you hit them up, Balak?
Yeah, so breaking news on 105 Through the Fan is presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today.
Tom Pelissero reports his sources say Mike McCarthy is out as the Cowboys head coach.
Whoa!
The sides could not agree on length of contract, and McCarthy will... The sides could not agree on length of contract. McCarthy will pursue other opportunities. He leaves Dallas with a winning record and three playoff appearances. That is breaking news. Mike McCarthy out as the Cowboys coach.
Holy freaking
moly. So the Mavericks.
No, sorry.
The Stars. I'm sorry,
Mike.
I think we're gonna have to, Mike, I'm going to have to jot that down as one of those moments where we were in a non-Cowboys segment and I had to talk
Jerry
about
heard
that.
Jerry heard his tease.
So there you go.
Who's saying this again?
That is Tom Pelissero. And okay. that is just as reliable of any source that you can find out.
So essentially...
So Schefter comes out with his report, and literally 30 minutes later, it's
Tom Pelissero's like, nope.
And granted, Pelissero has... you'll have to ask Bobby and Broadus about this, but I'm pretty sure Pelissero's been in one of those that kind of got in with McCarthy very well because McCarthy's done a good job of opening up to those NFL network people and some of the national people. So he's one of those that probably has a really good conversation with him and his agent.
Does this sound like then that, and correct me if you think I'm off, does this sound like Mike McCarthy stood his ground against the Cowboys, and they were like, that doesn't work for us. And he goes, well, you know what, brother? That doesn't work for me. And he walked out. I'm assuming. But like, because everything we talked about, think about, let's just go back an hour.
McCarthy wanted a longer contract.
Okay. And let's just go back. Okay. Because there's two things on that.
Everybody's reporting it now. Yeah.
An hour and 20 minutes ago. So an hour and 20 minutes ago, we're doing the crosstalk. And I think, I'll admit, I fell into this category. I thought that Mike McCarthy would just go along with whatever deal it is. Let's just say they give him a two-year deal, $10 million. Some of it's incentive-based, whatever. And Mike McCarthy is like, no, man, that's not going to work. Because we're going to do this exact same thing over again. I need at least a three-year deal, or I need at least a whatever-year deal, and I need at least $6 million, or I need my base salary to be guaranteed or whatever. I know part of that is speculation at this point, but an hour and 20 minutes ago, I stood just a few feet to the left of where I am right now, and I thought for sure that Mike McCarthy would give in to the low-ball contract offer of the Dallas Cowboys. And here we are, and it sounds like he sure as hell did not.
Well, good for him, but when you're looking at this as a Cowboys fan, you do have to look at it this way. The Cowboys wanted Mike McCarthy back under their terms and really to undercut him and just be the babysitter of the team, and Mike McCarthy said no. So now do the Cowboys look for a babysitter or do they look for a head coach? I know that's another topic, but I'm just thinking, Mike McCarthy said, no, if you're cutting me down to being a babysitter where I don't have any control over my staff, I don't have any control over the offense. Obviously, Mike Zimmer, I'm assuming, is going to be the defensive coordinator if I come back, and I'm going to assume they had a great time doing it together. It's like they ended up getting along, figuring out how to work together. But Mike was like, no, I can't give all of this up and just be a babysitter here. And so now the Cowboys move on and look for a babysitter?
That might be the case. I feel like there's a lot of things here. One, everything that comes along with being the Cowboys head coach, understanding how much money the Cowboys do bring in, but everything that goes along with it, Mike McCarthy was like, I deserve to be paid more for this. There's a lot of extra stuff being the Cowboys head coach, and I deserve more.
Can I ask you a question about that statement? I don't disagree with that statement whatsoever.
I also am tired of getting stabbed in the back.
Okay.
The turn of the corner.
Okay. Do you think if I boiled it down to essentially it was with all of the S I have to eat with this job, as opposed to let's get back to football, this is what I want?
Yeah. I mean, that definitely could be a massive factor there. We do have Bobby Belt on the line right now. If we'd like to have a conversation with the man. You're on vacation, Bobby. What are you doing right now?
Bobby, is this the greatest day of your life?
I know. I just wrapped up DallasCowboys.com. We were doing the draft show. Now I'm driving over to Plano to go see draft prospects at Exos. And saw the news to come through. And it was starting to feel, I definitely think this morning you were starting to get a sense, more people were starting to talk, and you were starting to get the feeling of like, okay, this isn't looking good for Mike, or this is trending towards the direction of a divorce. And now we enter a period of evaluation where they try to figure out who they want to bring in here. I think that...
Hold on, wait. Bobby, wait. Before we move on to the evaluation, I want to take a quick step back because of something you said. Can you expand on, it looked like it was trending towards a divorce, because our initial reaction here is, it sounded like Mike McCarthy said, I'm not going to take your lowball BS contract. I want something better. And that's why this has fallen apart.
Yeah, I think that this is something where the more you talk to people who had an awareness of what was going on, it sounded like this was just building to this point as of this morning where people were saying, yeah, I think there's some frustration here that, you know, there's not as much movement on, are we going to get this done? Are we going to figure this out? Are we going to actually figure out the terms of a potential return? What are we doing here? And I think that building frustration caused a little bit of animosity potentially for both sides. And what you see is, you know, I think a mutual divorce at this point. I don't think the Cowboys may position this as, hey, we wanted him back. He clearly wanted to go. But I mean, I think it feels very much like the trying to get somebody to quit so you don't have to fire him type of move.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
The Bobby Belt breakup special.
Yeah. Bobby's been through this before. He knows how it works. I see how that goes. Now you said, Bobby,
they will look ahead to, okay, I just wanted to clarify that before we looked ahead to anything. Yeah. Mike asked the question about what the hell kind of next head coach are you looking for? Where do we go now?
So they have always wanted experience or familiarity. That's what they want. So when you start thinking familiarity, I think the blinking light is obviously Kellen Moore.
Wow.
I think that Kellen is, that they would have to do some repair here. Kellen had a bad exit from Dallas. As much as it was reported, oh, they decided to move on, or they decided to give Mike the keys to the car or whatever you say, that is not how that breakup went. That breakup ended with Kellen asking out. And so I think that they would have to do some repair. They're probably not anything impossible to repair, but they still think very, very highly of him. Jerry and Stephen Jones think really highly of Kellen Moore, and so I think that that's an obvious fit right there. It's just, all right, how damaged was that? How much work do you potentially have to do to get Kellen Moore to want to come back here? But I mean, look, we've thrown out the name. I've thrown it out for months now. Mike asked Jerry about him. I do wonder if Jason Witten will get a look here, because it's just, I think just familiarity is a big thing to them. And they say, you know, you had Kellen Moore essentially walk off the field and become an offensive coordinator. You had Jason Garrett walk off the field and become an offensive coordinator. We just need a CEO here. And go look back at an article Tim Kalishaw wrote about Dan Campbell last year when they were end of the 23 season, when they were facing Detroit. And he interviewed Jerry and asked Jerry some questions. And Jerry took a left turn out of nowhere and said, you know, I think Jason Witten has a lot of the same traits that Dan Campbell has.
Yes, he did.
And so, I don't know, I think familiarity, Witten and Kellen make some sense. Obviously, we'll see. I could definitely see them wanting to talk to a Doug Peterson.
What about Aaron Glenn?
Potentially, a juggernaut. Aaron Glenn absolutely is somebody that they could want to talk to. That's somebody who's been here.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that would get a glowing review, I imagine, from Dan Campbell, who they trust. But yeah, they got a couple of different avenues they can go here. I would say, to me, before we get a chance to kind of talk to people, I think early on, knowing what they think of Kellen, to me, Kellen Moore seems like the obvious lead candidate right now.
Bobby, as far as timeline goes, how much of an urgency do you think the Cowboys are going to approach this with? I feel like Steven would probably approach it with a little more urgency.
Well, let's figure out if it's Jason Witten and Kellen Moore, like I just mentioned, if those are guys they're considering, there's probably no urgency there. Kellen okay. Moore is, you know, he's in the middle of a coaching playoff run. He's gotten some interviews, but I don't know that he's been as much of the top name in some of those areas as he would be here. Witten's obviously just coaching high school football right now. If they wanted to interview Doug Peterson or John Gruden or somebody like that, those guys, some of the candidates that I think make sense in terms of previous experience that are offensive-minded head coaches, there's not a lot of buzz around those guys right now. So that may be why when Jerry was, talking to you guys about urgency, he was like, no, there's really no urgency. And the field of candidates, you know, when Alec asked him, does the field of candidates impact at all your decision here? He's like, no, not really. Because I think he felt comfortable that the candidates he would want or the guy he was targeting may not be somebody that they have to fight for.
That is the lineup right there. We'll start, you know, making a long list and a short list. Bobby threw your short list together just now. So if you're listening right now, you already got the short list together. That's what's going to be confirmed shortly. But the long list is going to – we'll have lots of conversations about that over the next few hours.
Yeah, and I mean, there'll be obviously, you know, we mentioned Aaron Glenn there, but the Rooney Rule says you have to interview two minority candidates.
That's a fact.
So there'll be another name there, whether that's, you know, minimum Brian Flores or, you know, maybe Robert Saleh or some of these, various coaches out there that have been in the running and have been discussed. And so that'll all be there. I would imagine whoever they hire is an offensive head coach that has either previous NFL coaching experience, or if they don't have that, it's somebody they are very familiar with within the walls of the Star. So start, you know, narrowing that down pretty quickly. All right, previous head coaching experience, Gruden, Doug Peterson, Arthur Smith, Cliff Kingsbury. Not that those guys would be on the list, but that's the name pool of names you're looking at. And then, you know, familiarity, Kellen Moore, Jason Witten, offensive side of the ball, guys like that, I think you should start, you know, keen in on.
This might be a dumb question. It probably is, and I know the Cowboys would never, like, come out and say if there was, but when you talk about the Rooney Rule, this is still a franchise, unless I'm totally blanking, that has never had a not-white head coach, right?
That's true.
Yes, that is true. It's something where, it's a league mandate. They're going to have to, whether they, I need to pick my words carefully here on how you want to talk about the legitimacy of a candidacy for the Cowboys. I don't want to, you know, make accusations just because it looks a certain way. But I think that when you look at their history, yeah, they brought in Marvin Lewis for an interview. And then that felt like checking a little bit of a box. New England just was guilty of that. I think a lot of people felt like you had Vrabel in mind, and then you were checking a box. And that's not fair to those candidates. And I don't think it's fair to the process totally. So, I mean, we'll see how this all plays out. I would imagine Aaron Glenn, like we mentioned there, Saleh potentially. Maybe not Flores. Maybe Flores. It just depends on how – I don't know how much the Cowboys would view. Do we want to get involved with somebody who's in an active lawsuit with the league?
Yeah.
And so that may complicate things a little bit, but definitely I think that, you know, if you start saying who makes the most sense here, it's Kellen at the top. And if they start zeroing in on him, then you might just see, all right, we're trying to run through boxes that we're checking here.
Appreciate it very much. I hope this makes your vacation even better.
I love you all.
When are you coming back?
I'll be back Thursday, but I'll probably be on the morning show tomorrow at some point.
Why don't you hop on with us tomorrow?
I mean, I can do that too.
And then the next day?
We just talk to him.
Okay. Never mind, Bobby. We'll talk to you later, man.
We'll find out. See you.
All right. I think this is the next thing that I want to talk about, because right. I've seen a couple of people text this in. I'm going to tell you right now, and if I'm wrong, I think that's a great thing. I don't think this is the start of some movement where the Cowboys are going to start changing the way they do business. So here's how I'm going to set it up. Because a couple of people texted in, oh, the Cowboys fans have started to speak this year. Now Mike McCarthy's like, I'm not going to accept it. People are starting to stand up to the Cowboys. I'll tell you this. I don't think that's what's happening, and I don't think that's going to change anything about the way the Cowboys do business. But maybe y'all disagree. But we'll talk more about that. And Mike McCarthy out as head coach. And just wait for that statement from the Jones family to be like, what's the big deal? Like, his contract expired tomorrow. So that's just what happened. So there's nothing to see here, as if this is not a big deal.
Oh, no, yeah, no.
They can still hire him back.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no...
Because his contract expired, still not fired.
Yeah, what's the big deal?
Here's one of my lineups, Kevin. McCarthy, 4 to 5 years. Jerry, 2 years. McCarthy, nah, I'm out. Wait. No, hold on. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody I'm out. You deal with it after that.
Yep.
Let's hit the C note here. Top headline says it's a historic day, Cowboys fans. Mike McCarthy will not be back. News broke around 11 o'clock here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. And we're reacting to it, talking about, you know, what happened and what could happen next. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation, 214 or 817-333-3333. Go online to frankelfirm.com. Okay, so Frankel Injury Attorney text line is open. I want to know from you, who would you hire as head coach? I think we'd all say Ben Johnson in here. Who do you think is going to be the head coach, though, based on the candidates that are out there at 877-881-1053? Gentlemen, I put mine on the table last hour. I think it's a choice between Kellen Moore and Mike Zimmer if I had to, like, pick what is most probable here. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on who you think at this point with the field wide open. If you had to pick one guy, who's it going to be?
Well, I have the odds right here. Kellen Moore is the favorite from Bet Online. And then it's primetime Deion. And then it's Cliff Kingsbury.
Didn't Jerry already shut down the Deion idea pretty much? And I know he says a lot of stuff, and it's hard to tell what you can take seriously and not. But
and Deion kind of shut it down himself. Like he said, he really just wants to coach his sons.
Yeah, I think
he's not going to get to do that here.
If he is going to be coach, it would have to be after the draft till he knows where his son is going, and then maybe start next year or start, you know, as a position coach with a team. But Deion Sanders would be shocking. I think you're flushing your money away.
Yeah, yeah, and all things could be more possible if the Cowboys were willing to money whip somebody and just not allow them to say take no for an answer. But we know the Cowboys' position on that. Kingsbury's third, then Joe Brady, offensive coordinator for the Bills, then Lincoln Riley, funny enough, as if he's, give me a break. And then it's Ben Johnson, Bill Belichick, Brian Flores, yada, yada, yada.
The Lincoln Riley thing is hilarious because I don't think the Bears, who have done a lot of interviewing and requesting, even requested to interview Lincoln Riley, and that's Caleb Williams' former coach. If you're interested in Lincoln Riley, to me, that would be all I need to know. I've got the player's former head coach at quarterback, and I'm not interested. So if I'm the Cowboys, like again, that would be very, very spot on for them. They're a little bit late to the party on this. Like 2 years ago, Lincoln was a sexy name. Not anymore. So it makes sense for them now to say, all right, let's do this with Lincoln Riley. I think you're right. I think Kellen Moore is number one. He's most likely going to get the job if he wants to take the job. And why? Because also then Jason Witten could be part of the staff, and maybe that's big picture whom they envision as being their guy like they did with Jason Garrett. That seems to be a lot of the momentum right now. In a perfect world, it's exactly what I said. I would love to call the Rams and be like, guys, is there any way I can trade for Sean McVay?
I kind of feel like, though, and I'm going to throw you guys a curveball. I think Aaron Glenn's going to get this job.
I'd be interested in Aaron Glenn, too.
I think Aaron Glenn's going to have a really, really good shot at this job. I think he's going to interview very well. He's going to exude toughness. He's going to exude leadership.
That would be fantastic.
There's going to be a possibility that he's going to put together a very similar staff that, like they have at Detroit. He's got some connections. He knows young offensive coaches he works against. He's as a coordinator, he's worked against most of the really good offenses in the league. He might have an idea of who gives him hell when he has to call defensive plays.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to be, when he walks through that door, he is going to be a very confident person. And I think he's going to have a plan. And I think he's going to convince Jerry, Steven, and Will that he could work with him and talk to him about personnel and what they need to do and have a really good opinion on that, on team building.
So I would love that.
I'm gonna step away from the Kellen Moore world.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna tell you why you should hire Aaron Glenn. And that's the reasons why I just gave
you. I would love that. That would be the most exciting, because now he knows, most likely being on that staff, like Hank Fraley, their line coach.
Yeah.
Right. Can he call plays? Is he good at this? Because then you're able to bring over an offensive coordinator / offensive line coach that's done a hell of a job there with the Lions. So Aaron Glenn is probably the name that we're throwing around out of like possible realistic options, because he does have history in the organization having played here. That would get me the most excited and optimistic.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, he checks all the boxes. He's going to build you a culture. I think he might have, the ability to insulate the roster and the guys away from the Jerry Jones noise and the entitlement here. You know, I just think as a program builder, as a culture builder, Aaron Glenn's the guy. And the fact that he's worked with Ben Johnson, he has an up-close appreciation for how important the motion is on offense and running it that way. And obviously his defensive chops are really, really good. And if you're going to win with this team moving forward, I think with Dak Prescott, your defense is going to have to be elite, bro.
Yes.
Which could go to, you know, maybe hiring a defensive-minded head coach. Speaking of that, you know, Pete Carroll, I think whenever you're talking about older guys, mm-hmm. you know, over 65, 70 retirement age, whatever you want to call it, I think that's going to have a higher probability with Jerry Jones and the Cowboys than others, because he likes
Bill
the experience.
Parcells. He did that with Bill Parcells, you know, and you know, can Pete Carroll bring in, you know, we'll see the type of staff that he can generate. I think that's going to be huge, whoever gets this job. Like, if I'm Jerry Jones, you have to convince me not only about you doing this job, I need to know your coaches. I need to know who you're hiring as your line coach, your linebacker coach. Because, hey, I think we have a pretty good one in Al Harris here. You know, would you be interested in talking to Al Harris? You know, I think there's some, you know, some ways that I would try and see how this all works out. But man, I mean, to me, it's, you know, there's a lot of inviting things about. Just don't go for a guy just because you have familiarity. Go for the guys that you feel like have been in the best programs. Now, you know, you say this about Aaron Glenn. You know, the Saints were winning with Sean Payton when he was there. As a player, you know, he's seen like the good and the bad. But yeah, I think everywhere he's been a winner. Yeah, that's the thing. Give me the guy that's a winner. Give me the guy that can hire the staff. You know, those are the types of guys I'm interviewing right now.
And I'm with you. And that would be, of all the options here, that's a no-brainer home run, I would say. But, you know, he is a guy that's going to have options. Like, I think the Saints, the Jets, they really want him. You can't just give him some crappy deal and expect him to sign it, unless he has some affinity for wanting to coach the Cowboys that I'm unaware of. But the Jets and the Saints, they're going to come correct with a contract. The numbers and all that stuff, maybe whatever control, you know, so
I don't think he has to worry about control, because we know from experience that head coaches, whether they want to take the opportunity or not, do have a big say in what goes on with this personnel department.
Yeah, but there's personnel, and then there's like setting the tone of the organization, which I think was a bigger concern for Mike.
I think that, okay, I'm going to say this. I don't think Mike is a tone setter head coach. I don't. I think Mike wants everybody to like him. I think Mike wants to get along with the players. I think Mike wants to be that. I when you start to talk about tone setting and stuff like that, you got to go in there with that mindset. You know, Bill Parcells set a tone with this organization when he came in.
Yeah, but like who said it last week? I want to see Mike have a chance to do it his way. You know, maybe that's not setting the tone. Maybe it's doing
it your
way. That
was Mike Zimmer, I believe. Right?
No. Dak said that about Mike McCarthy, and then Jane had an article that she wrote that she interviewed a player that said that about Mike as well.
Well, okay, do you guys see Mike McCarthy as a hard-ass coach?
No.
See, it's hard to be a hard-ass coach when you're not a hard-ass coach. You can't fool players. You can't walk into a locker room and 1 year be a nice guy and then the next year try and be hard ass guy.
But you don't have to be a hard ass to like get to choose your starting running back, you know, or have an owner that's not chatting with the media constantly. I think those are things of interest.
There was a time where Jerry and Steven, if you remember, Jerry and Steven were doing less interviews and less. They were letting Mike be the message. Yeah. You know, they were letting Mike be the message, and you know, but yeah, they can't help themselves. I think you're absolutely right about that. But if you show you have the ability to be that guy, that leader,
yeah,
I think they'll allow you to do that. Now we'll see. I think that Aaron Glenn as a head coach, potentially as a leader, would be much different than what Mike McCarthy would be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I don't know if you're competing against the Jets unless the money's ridiculous. Like, that is such a dumpster fire. If you have concerns with how the Joneses do things, wouldn't your concerns be even bigger with Woody Johnson?
Yes,
bought out of it?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, for sure. But he played for them. Like, he's clearly been, like, everybody's been tying him to either the Jets or the Saints. And I mean,
it is New York. If you love New York, there's only two chances to coach there.
Yeah. And if the money could be, I mean, double per year, I think that's
the Jets would money with him. The Jets would absolutely go ahead and pay more, I would assume, than the Cowboys would. But played both in Dallas and New York and then coached, I guess, with the Saints. So familiarity with all three. Mm-hmm.
Is it $4 million? Did that put Mike in the bottom 20% of the league?
Yeah, Mike was not a very high paid head coach.
That's just crazy.
It's funny that, you know, Aaron Glenn, I mean, he's from Texas, right?
Mm-hmm. He's A&M guy, right?
Humble, Texas, I think, is where 52 years old. You know, we've seen like this. He's the perfect mix of leader, young, get your attention guy, played for the coach. That, you know, say what you want about, you have to admire. There's nobody in hell that wanted to go play in Detroit. I think there's people that want to actually go and play in Detroit now with what they're doing. You know, I can imagine. So out of Detroit, don't trade me there. I'm not going to sign in Detroit. I think if you go somewhere and you show people that you can lead, and it pays off, you can get them to play anywhere. Now again, can the front office stay out of the way? That's going to be the big question. The answer is probably no. But I think that, to me, I would make every effort I could to try and bring that Texan back home. Is what I do if I was a Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, no doubt. So Mike was at 20th in the NFL at 4. Ahead of him, Dan Quinn, Zach Taylor, Dan Campbell, Matt Eberflus, D'Amico Ryans. A lot of coaches in their first gigs. Nick Sirianni, Robert Sala, Matt LaFleur at 6, Sean McDermott at 8, Doug Peterson at 8.5. There's a team that's willing to pay you as well there with the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. Mike McDonald just got the job with the Seattle Seahawks. He got $9 million. So there's quite, and then the double digit million club starts at 7th with John Harbaugh at 12, and you go through Tomlin and Shanahan and McVay and Harbaugh and Sean Payton at 18, and then your guy Andy Reid at $20 million a year.
Yeah, we just got a text from Sean Sharif, and he said that Archer reported McCarthy was actually making 8 per. Mm. So Sean's saying we were all wrong about the salary. So that's. I don't know if Sean, I mean, I appreciate him listening and stuff like that. I mean, he's saying...
Yeah, where did that number come from?
I need to ask Archer that question, find out.
Because I saw that on Twitter earlier as well, that it was $8 million, and everywhere I've looked since, rankings...
Let me circle back on that for you.
Okay, Krusty's Corner's coming up next, though, Brian. Where are you taking it?
Yeah, there's a couple of things from these playoff games I want to point out of why a team won or a team lost. We'll do that next.
Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Bobby Belt back Thursday. We got Peyton. We got Carter in the back. Thank you for being a total. That stands for turn it on, leave it on. In case you're moving around that radio dial, some radio changes in your usual lineup. Hopefully you give us a chance and you stick around. Hopefully you showed up to the building yesterday. I heard the Rangers, Marcus Semien, Whataburger line was out the building through the parking garage. So the Ranger fans representing, and you know we're trying to represent for you, the Cowboy and NFL fan nonstop like we've been doing for 15 years. Mike McCarthy is out. What's next? Let's talk about all of it with a man who has his own unique connection to Mike McCarthy. If you'll recall a press conference that happened earlier this year between McCarthy and Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
The Harris Bulver Star Telegram. I know you said you guys don't have a ton of time for corrections this week, but with Jordan Lewis talking about details, Michael Parsons last night talking about accountability, how do you kind of work those conversations in this?
Pretty dramatic there, Nick. I'll tell you, you must have practiced that one. Jeez, I mean, Thursday schedule. I mean, that's where we're on. I mean, it's we didn't win the game. So I think that's part of where we are. I mean, so, yeah, I think they do a good job of, you know, answering your questions. It's emotional after the game. So I'm not ever going to referee emotion on the field or after a game.
And that created an all-time drop for us with pretty dramatic there, Nick. With Nick Harris on the D&M Leasing Hotline on 105.3 The Fan. Good morning, man. How are you?
No drama queen antics today, but I'm doing pretty good. How are y'all?
Your thoughts on the McCarthy news. What were some of the first thoughts that you had when you heard and found out?
Yeah, it was definitely a back and forth type week as far as how I felt things would end up going. You know, you hear about them having conversations and long conversations, but you don't necessarily hear that negotiations are a huge part of it. And then yesterday's news comes down. I think the timing probably surprised me a little bit. I expected them to at least go through today, through the exclusive negotiating window. Nevertheless, it happens when it happens, and here we are. So I think the overall result isn't terribly surprising, just kind of given the, you know, how the season went down at certain times. And I think you look, whenever this team was 3-7, I think a lot of people pretty much assumed he was gone. And then once they put together 4 wins in 5 weeks, you know, looked good down the stretch. And that's when the momentum really started to kick around about his return. But I think overall the result for me isn't terribly surprising.
Do you think this entire situation with Mike was mishandled by the Cowboys, that it was either just sloppy or unprofessional?
You know, this is business at the end of the day. You know, they had an exclusive negotiating window. And you know, if as a business, you take advantage of that. I think if you look at, you know, how other businesses operate outside of football, they would be operating under the same pretense. You know, that's in the contract. If they didn't want that a part of the contract, then they would have said that in the very beginning. Now, granted, I think this really hurts the assistants more than anybody. McCarthy's going to be all right. You know, he's going to go get an interview with the Bears. He's going to get interest from the Saints. It wouldn't surprise me if the Jaguars maybe reach out as well. He's going to get his interest and be just fine. But it's mainly the assistants. You know, you think about how, like, the Patriots are starting to put a staff together. You know, maybe if they had reached out to an assistant or two, and that assistant had to be like, well, you know, let me see what happens in Dallas, and then the Patriots move on. But if anything, I think the holding period just kind of messed with the assistants more than anybody. But McCarthy will be okay at the end of the day.
You know, does their, you know, I guess because, like, it is their right to maintain his employment until the end date, but, you know, I'm sure the contracts are like that for all the other coaches that were fired too. Just the timeline of that whole thing they just dragged their feet, right?
Yeah, and absolutely. I think this is definitely a conclusion they could have came to, you know, Thursday or Friday last week, and it would have made things a little bit easier on the back end as far as trying to figure out, you know, what happens with those guys individually moving forward. You know, making it drag through the weekend and through the wild card playoff weekend, that it's not ideal by any means. And it didn't necessarily sound like it took, like, a certain amount of time to really get through contract negotiations, quote unquote. You know, it felt like those discussions happened rather quickly. And whenever they figure out that they were on two different sides of the spectrum as far as contract length, that's when they decided to go separate ways. So if they had just started that conversation maybe Wednesday, Thursday, maybe this conclusion happens a little bit quicker.
Nick Harris, 4-star Telegram here on the Fan Cowboys Insider. Do you think Cowboy fans should be upset over this timeline and the perceived missing of interview opportunities with teams that are still in it? Or do you not think that the possible names out there were serious Cowboy thoughts anyway?
Yeah, I'm under that latter thinking. Shireen Williams had put out yesterday, it was like, yeah, okay, yeah, they missed out with Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and Spagnuolo. But these are guys that they probably would not have interviewed anyway, given their you know, past about Jerry Jones not wanting first-time head coaches unless he has a deep understanding of who they are. You know, that's where I think Kellen Moore is a little bit of an outlier in that sense. But the Ben Johnsons and the Aaron Glenns, I don't think they necessarily had a huge shot. I mean, Aaron Glenn, yes, played in Dallas. But I don't think the experience there from Jerry's perspective is deep enough to say that they missed out on a window. I think that was definitely calculated last week as well. I don't see either of those guys being huge contenders here.
Why was Deion Sanders not on your list of candidates yesterday?
Yeah, I'm not a huge believer in him being a top candidate. I was kind of monitoring the Deion pulse just from an NFL standpoint, going back to late December, and still have a lot of contacts in the college realm where I came from before covering the Cowboys. And you know, talking to those guys, he seems very comfortable in Boulder, and he wants to continue to coach at the college level. He says he feels like he gets the most out of guys when he can pull them out of high school and mold them at the college level and turn them into men. So I think it's not a surprise that his name is starting to garner some interest. I think it's a surprise that he was the first name that popped up. I think I didn't expect that to happen, you know, right off the bat. But I'm not expecting him to be a top candidate at any point. Will they talk? Sure, maybe, but I don't think he's going to end up being a head coach here. That's why I didn't put him on that candidates list.
Okay, let's run through your list then. At the very top is Kellen Moore. Why?
Yeah, the interest from the Joneses in Kellen Moore has continued to stay even after his departure in 2022. There's still a lot of respect there from the Joneses. Now, how the exit exactly went down a couple of years ago, they would need to talk through that. But from what I understand, it's not something that's so difficult that they can't overcome. But I think this is going to be a situation where they wait out for Kellen Moore at the very least, to see when he can talk, when that happens. They want to talk to Kellen Moore. It would surprise me if they move on something before the Eagles either are out of the playoffs or if they make a Super Bowl run.
Nick, would Kellen Moore just be more of the same? Like, it's just another comfortable hire that they know that isn't anything exciting or unique and runs that same Jason Garrett-y offense?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think the one caveat I think you could throw in is that, you know, Kellen Moore, while still young and he's had a couple of years out of the building, him and Dak had a great relationship. And if you're trying to maximize what you can get out of Dak and CD moving forward, then I think that marriage could work out in a couple of years away for both sides. Maybe them coming back together, they're able to add some new wrinkles within that. I think that, you know, Kellen's offensive style is a little bit more creative than I think what we maybe would have seen over the course of the last couple of years under McCarthy. Even in 2023, whenever the offense was moving at its times, I loved the creativity from Kellen a lot more than I did from McCarthy. That's just me personally. I feel like that's only been, you know, explored in his time with the Chargers last year. Granted, they dealt with a lot of injury, and then Philadelphia this year. I think the one concern I would have, though, is, okay, yeah, he's looked good in Philadelphia this year, but he's got this all-world offensive line. He's got a running back that was contending for the rushing record, and he's got a quarterback that can be a tank at times. So, you know, how much is personnel also helping Kellen Moore out in Philly?
But
so,
Nick, what about running the organization? Like, I don't even care as much about the offensive mind stuff. Like, how is Kellen Moore going to stand in front of the entire room, command them, have them be different, tighter, more disciplined, better coach than Mike McCarthy with whatever type of stick he can carry?
Yeah, and I think that's very valid, too. He would need a DC that can really kind of, you know, wield that power around and be able to, you know, lay the law down at times. I think that's what the goal was with Mike Zimmer. And sure, yes, Mike Zimmer did bring that. But I think they would definitely need a DC that could kind of wield that power around and command respect for the entire room. I'm with you there.
Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star-Telegram at 105 through the Fan. The second name in your column is John Gruden.
Yeah, John Gruden's a fascinating one. Now, I don't necessarily see a reality where this lawsuit between Gruden and the NFL can be navigated, but it's not one to throw out, according to someone I talked to yesterday, just because of that one reason. Now, Gruden, now talk about a guy that can command respect. He's certainly that. He's got this fiery coaching style, fiery personality. It just makes sense on the surface between the Joneses and Gruden. But I think this lawsuit would definitely have to be navigated.
Witten.
Yeah, Witten. This is I am under the impression that he's going to be on the staff in some capacity. Jerry is obviously He loves what Witten brings to the table. Whenever Dan Campbell has been brought up on you guys' airwaves over the course of the last couple of years, he always finds a way to pivot to Witten. And I think Witten is going to be a name that gets kicked up. It would be a surprise to me if he does not end up on the staff. Also, a couple of former players, I think, to monitor as far as a staff moving forward. This is not head coach-wise, but Tashar Choice from Texas, running backs coach, and DeMarco Murray, running backs coach at Oklahoma.
Are Witten's kids still in school? Like, would he leave coaching them?
And that's the question he would have to answer, because Cooper Witten, yes, is he still got two more years. He's trending to be a five-star prospect. He's probably going to be either a safety or a tight end himself. He's already getting big time offers over at Argyle Liberty Christian. So that would have to be a question he has to answer for sure.
Doug Peterson.
Yeah. Now this is one that I think if this search becomes extensive and they get tired of waiting around for Kellen Moore, or they decide they don't want to move on Kellen Moore, I think this is probably a quote unquote safe option. Now, I don't think this necessarily excites, but it's a guy who has a ton of experience in the NFC East with the Philadelphia Eagles. I believe it's 9 seasons he's had total coaching with the Eagles. He obviously had those years as head coach where he won a Super Bowl. It just kind of checks all the boxes as far as what Jerry Jones likes. Super Bowl winning head coach, experience in the division. Things did not go down in Jacksonville this last year, obviously, in a great way. A 4-13 this past year, but had a couple of winning seasons in Jacksonville, which is tough to do too.
Kingsbury.
Yeah, this is one that would not surprise me if we hear noise on early on, even with Washington continuing their playoff run. Obviously, that they can't interview him until that they are out. But I think Kingsbury makes some sense on the surface. He's a New Braunfels native. He'd potentially be looking to come back to Texas. I am not a huge fan of a potential Kingsbury hire just because his extensive head coaching career, not only in the NFL, but in the NCAA ranks, has never proven to be, you know, contending for titles or anything of the sort. He has a losing record in the NCAA at Texas Tech and at Arizona. Sure, he had a couple of winning seasons, but no playoff wins. He would really have to sell playoff success. Jerry would have to sell playoff success and how that could be attainable under a Kingsbury-type hire.
I love that you put out your ideal staff that consisted of defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, offensive coordinator Josh McCown, and head coach Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I think that's the one for me, Pete Carroll. You know, if that were to happen, you talk about a guy that can build a staff and knows how to build a staff. He knows how to win. Yeah, sure. He's going to be 74 years old when this season kicks off, but he's still moving around. You think back to that last season he had in Seattle where he was, punching guys on their helmet and throwing balls around. I mean, he's still very active. Yeah. He still runs every day. I'm not under the impression that Carroll is, you know, one of these old guys out here that's, you know, barely getting out of bed every morning. I think it would be an interesting marriage between the two sides. They would definitely have to figure out a power structure and stick to it. But I think Carroll could do a really good job building a staff. I mean, his last 12 seasons in Seattle, he only had one losing season. He had 11 winning seasons. I think this is a guy that if you want to win, you bring in Pete Carroll. He'll build you a hell of a staff, and then he'll leave you in a good spot to where whenever he does need to retire 4 or 5 years from now,
and where
somebody could take over.
Where the heck did your final name come from in Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, you talk about his experience with his father, Monty, back in 2013, and you know, the Joneses kind of throwing Monty onto the Jason Garrett staff. And obviously a lot of respect between the Kiffin family and the Jones family. This one would not surprise me if some interest kicks up out of thin air. The buyout at Ole Miss is only $4 million. It's a lot lower than, you know, other college guys we would be talking about, like Steve Sarkisian. I believe his is at 6. Lincoln Riley, Bill Belichick's is at 10. It just would not surprise me if this one, you know, starts to buzz a little bit at a certain point. I'm not necessarily sure that this would be the best marriage as a head coach, but it wouldn't surprise me if maybe some interest kicks up between both sides.
Nick, what is something you could not say about McCarthy while he was here that you can say now? Whether it was an opinion, a report, just something, you know, that we're all going to get stuff off our chest here over the next few days and weeks. Is there something that jumps to mind?
Yeah, no, not necessarily. You know, I honestly commend McCarthy, because whenever that moment happened back in week two or week three of the season last year, he apologized almost right off the bat for it. So I felt like I had a good working relationship with Mike. You know, that I think that moment definitely took off and, you know, painted our relationship a little bit specifically. But, you know, I wish Mike the best. I really do. You know, I hope it works out for him. But I do believe this is the right move for the Cowboys. I think a fresh start for both sides could end up being a really good thing. I think it'd be really funny, though, if we look up next year and this team's heading to Soldier Field and Mike McCarthy's on the other sideline.
And they are going to Chicago. Keep up the great work, man. Thank you for the time. We'll be in touch.
Yeah, thanks, fellas. Y'all have a good one.
Nick Harris, Fort Worth Star-Telegram on the D&M Leasing Hotline.
Pretty dramatic there, Nick.
We have
it. You must practice that one.
AEW ticket giveaway. Deion Sanders and why it's not going to happen here, and your phone calls on McCarthy and what should happen next at 877-881-1053. Tolo tickets and your Cowboy calls after this. KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through the Fan. Right now we bring in football knower extraordinaire, former Cowboys quarterback, Cowboys broadcaster. It is Babe Laufenberg. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So I threw out the same hypothetical to you that I did everybody else, but we added Jason Witten to the first group. Uh-huh. So the first group is Kellen Moore, Mike Zimmer, Jason Witten, and Deion Sanders, or every other human being on the face of planet Earth. Where do you think the Cowboys' next head coach comes from?
Should we point out, too, that Babe did walk in with a Colorado Buffaloes coat on?
I did.
So he need to point that out.
So he's
out.
A Deion guy.
We'll see.
Well, I need to point this out, that my son was actually a student assistant coach at Colorado, went to Boulder, and I stole the jacket from him.
I gotcha. I do like
the jacket, it's but I do coat. Love when you walk around in something like that, and you guys probably had this. Everybody, hey, go Buffs, go Buffs. Of course, you hear it a lot more now. That Deion Sanders.
Yes, very much.
Yes, I will take the other. Okay. The rest of the world.
Okay, all right. Because a lot of people, and you can have whatever opinion you want on this, but a lot of people seem like,
I appreciate that, by the way.
Yes, that was a weird thing for me to say. A lot of people seem to be like disappointed about something that hasn't even happened yet.
Sure.
And they're like, it's going to be Zimmer. It's going to be Moore. It's going to be retread. Whatever you think it is.
Right.
And people are already disappointed. Is that just like part of being a fan, that you're just conditioned to like, my team will let me down somehow?
Well, I think a bigger part of it is there's not that one guy out there where you said, man, if my team got this guy. I think when the Rangers, Mike can talk about this more eloquently than I can, when they got Bochy, I mean, it's like, wow, this is a big time guy. This is a winner.
Would Belichick have fit that bill then?
No.
That's how I felt about Parcells.
Oh, I did too. I did too. And here's the interesting thing to me. They've run the gamut on head coaches after Jimmy left. I don't want to say I don't count Barry, but and this is not in any snarky way, but he inherited a whole staff. He brought no one. They just said, you're going to be the head coach, and here are your defensive court guys, and here are your offensive guys, and these are your players. And
sounds good.
And just go. Go out there and show up on Sunday and coach them and
manage the group.
Now I will say this: Barry always said, they said, "Well, you won with other people's players," and he said, "Yeah, we could have lost," and it's true that he did win a Super Bowl. But to the point of running the gamut with coaches, so they went. Hopefully, I get this order right. Now there's too many. At one point, it was easy to be a talk show radio host, wasn't it?
Jimmy,
29 years. You said Tom Landry.
I don't know, man. I think about the days where I couldn't just type something up on my computer, and I was like, I don't know, let's go run to the library, and we'll get that information.
Barry,
yeah, so you go,
Chan.
You go Chan, bright young assistant, supposedly, right, at that time. Oh, this guy in Denver and John Elway, and he wasn't the guy. So then they said, well, let's go to that comfortability factor. People that are in the building know the building, and it was?
Dave Campo.
Okay. Then you said?
The Big Tuna.
We got to go big. And part of that was obviously trying to sell the stadium.
Yeah.
And that, I think, it excited me. Let me say that. What was it, 20 years ago?
Yeah. So
I don't know if it excited the fan base, but it sure excited me to say, wow, they got a guy that's going to come in here. But the part of the problem of that was the owner had no fun, because Parcells was a guy you needed to hear from. And so the owner didn't have had 4 years of probably the worst years of his life as an owner. So we get rid of that guy, and in comes Uncle Wade.
Yep.
Then they get rid of Uncle Wade and
Jason.
Guy familiar in the building, blah, blah, blah. Bright young assistant.
Yeah.
If you remember, I mean, he was I've never asked him. You know, he turned down the Baltimore job.
Mm-hmm.
Turned it down. Turned it down. I remember that.
He's
turned
a
it
hot
down.
Name.
Turned down the Atlanta job. Turned it down to come back for another year as a coordinator. And I always wonder, and I've never asked him, do you regret? My guess is when you see what Baltimore's done and that organization and Ozzie Newsome and just the way that things run.
Probably.
I mean, I would sit there and go,
yeah.
Well, but it's a path not taken.
Right? Yeah.
You know, if he had had great success here, I mean, let's face it, the Baltimore Ravens are not the Dallas Cowboys in terms of visibility and what it means and putting it on your resume. So anyway, so that brings us to, well, and then, of course, Mike McCarthy. And there were some mixed, I think, I don't want to say feelings, but thoughts on McCarthy. You know, he had two of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. You can go five, you can go 20.
I got you. I mean, yeah.
I think everybody would acknowledge that Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers are.
Sure.
They may not be on the Mount Rushmore of the four guys, but if you do a Mount Rushmore and there's 10 or 15, they're on it.
Yeah.
They went to one Super Bowl. Went to one Super Bowl. So there were people saying, now he did go to three NFC championship games that they lost, but, you know, there are people saying, why didn't he win more? Why didn't he win bigger there? So there's all sorts of. And this next guy, again, to me, the only guy that's going to excite me, and I think it would excite the fan base, is Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator at Detroit.
That's who I want to.
So one, I don't know if he's going to be a great head coach. I don't know any of that. But that's the one guy where I'd say, okay, wow. Now, that's the guy.
In today's NFL, how much will Jerry Jones talk to Dak Prescott about this decision?
I honestly don't know. I would doubt a whole lot. I had somebody from Green Bay, very high-ranking official, tell me, yeah, Aaron Rodgers was a better quarterback than he was a GM. Okay? Yeah. So when you start letting players get involved, and I understand if you have a relationship with a guy, hey, I played with this guy in Detroit. He's great, all about it, hard worker. So if you have a relationship, then you go to the guy. But, you know, Dak Prescott has no relationship, let's say, with Ben Johnson.
Right.
He might have met him once. I don't know. So to sit there and go to your quarterback, but hey, it hasn't worked out for the last 29 years, so maybe you do let Dak go ahead and pick the next guy.
And I know we're going to get to the Troy Aikman stuff. We might actually see how much time you have in your schedule if you want to hang out for a minute.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is, like, in the building, when that firing takes place, like, how does it affect the players and everything? Because I'm just concerned about it as a fan. Like, yeah. I care as a fan.
Are you using the wrong term, though, in this situation?
What do you mean?
Jerry didn't fire Mike McCarthy.
I'm sorry.
Mike walked.
When you change coaches.
That's a good point. That's a
because
good point.
Because I think I can tell
that
you
is
this,
a great
babe,
point.
It's very different from a player's perspective if a coach kind of leaves and you're hearing it as the coach left, or your owner and general manager fired your coach.
And there seems to be some difference of opinion about whether they were like, hey, I'm going to be really mean, so you don't break up with me and I have to break up with you, versus Mike's like, I'm not taking it anymore. So that's a great point.
Well, in my mind, he was fired. Now, they're going to say we mutually agreed and all that good stuff. And
why do you say that?
Because he wanted to be back. So if you want to be somewhere and you're not there,
you got fired.
You got fired.
Yeah.
You can put all the semantics you want onto it.
Yeah.
But he got fired. Now, I understand his contract was up, so technically the contract lapsed and, but
what's that trickle down into the team? Like, whether they quit or got fired, like, what?
Very little.
Really?
Very little.
Huh.
Nobody. When they start training camp, and doing the game, who was the last game against Washington? They all run together. You know how that goes. I said to Brad Sham, I asked a question of McCarthy during the week. Are you going to kind of take this game in knowing it could be your last game? Certainly as a Cowboys coach, maybe of your NFL career. But then I asked that question, and he said basically he's going to fight that urge. I'm paraphrasing here. But I said to Brad, there's 10 or 15 players on this field today who won't have a job next year.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be in the NFL. They don't know it. As players, I always say, the phone just stops ringing, right? I managed to squeak out 8 years. And in year nine, the phone quit ringing. You keep waiting for somebody to call. They get a guy hurt, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the phone stops ringing. Very few guys are like Roger Staubach and you get to retire. I always laugh. People ask me, hey, babe, when did you retire? When did you retire? And I always say, I did not retire. They retired me.
Right.
I said, I still want to play. And they said, yeah, well, guess what? We don't want you. So,
and you kind of feel that way too, right, Mike?
Yeah, I feel like almost every player in the history of sports, this probably, is how it is. Yeah. There's very few John Elways.
Right, that say, you know what? I've won my two Super Bowls in the last 2 years. I'm going to go out and going to go out on top. And but again, there are 10, 15 guys on that field won't have jobs in the NFL next year.
All right. There's a lot of great stuff here.
My point being very quickly, you're more concerned about your job.
That makes sense.
I'm more concerned about, will I have a job, than who am I going to work for next year?
All righty, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. This segment is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. We're going commercial free to the top. LA Live's coming up in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk with John Mashota here of The Athletic, all things Cowboys. The Expressway is presented by the On-Time Experts. And a good afternoon, John. How the heck are you? Okay, John Mashota coming up here momentarily. Of course, the big story of the day is everybody trying to answer for themselves how serious of a candidate is Deion Sanders to be the next head coach of the Cowboys. I could see engagement forming. I could see Rooney Rule obligations. And if that's the case, then of course you couldn't let off any indication that it's not a serious interview. So there's a lot of different possibilities, I think. I was surprised last night when the news came across that, you know, the Cowboys were seriously considering it. We interviewed Jordan Schultz, the Fox Sports NFL insider, back there at 3:20. And he stood on it, said it's legitimate, considers him one of the finalists. Brian, what's your read on this overall situation?
Yeah, just talking to a bunch of people, and this can go a lot of different ways because of Jerry Jones and, you know, Stephen Jones, and he has an affection for Deion Sanders. Just talking to a number of people around the league last night, I just believe that this is a situation where Deion is trying to squeeze Colorado for some more funds. And, you know, that bunch right there generated a lot of money for Colorado. So,
yeah.
But I feel like that we'll see if in fact this changes and that he becomes a serious candidate. But I think Jerry's doing Deion a favor, and I think Deion's doing Jerry a favor.
Well, I mean, to that point, the visibility that Deion has given the Colorado program and the brand
is
worth way more than the $6 million a year I believe they're paying him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so it's time now to talk with John Mashota here of The Athletic on your home of the Cowboys. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with the decision to not bring back Mike McCarthy. Did that surprise you?
It did. It did, because I felt like Jerry would stay on the same path that he has been on for several years, where he leaned into more of maybe doing what's the most comfortable thing. He talked about being all in the offseason ad nauseum, and obviously that didn't mean all in actual adding free agents and things like that. And so I felt like this season would be an all in thing, where if it didn't go well, maybe he goes in another direction. And he ended up doing that. But I still believe that what was more comfortable was just going another couple years with Mike McCarthy, because there really isn't that obvious coaching candidate out there that, as we see right now, that where we said today. So I thought he would do what was the most comfortable thing, but he didn't. And so now they have to look for a new coach, and that's probably going to be a little uncomfortable. So that's why it makes it interesting.
Do you agree with or do you confirm the report that it came down to Mike wanting more years than the Cowboys were willing to give him at this point?
That's what I've heard, but I can't say it's definitive. I mean, there's a lot of different things that you hear when something like this goes down. But it's also pretty fascinating to me, because it's Cowboys thing, that the who is the one that was the first to pull away is such a big story, not as much as like, well, where are they going to go next? It's like, hold on. Let's focus more in on this, to the point of if he gets that job in Chicago or New Orleans, like people like myself are going to be very interested in that opening press conference and what he says, because they'll certainly be asked about why things didn't work out in Dallas. And I'm not saying that's not a storyline with other teams, but certainly with the Dallas Cowboys, certainly with Jerry Jones involved, it is fascinating how we don't know definitively who's the one that was the first to back away, because you can certainly see what Jerry Jones would want to do only a year or two, just with the direction things have been going. And then I can see why Mike McCarthy would want the stability of a longer-term deal, not just for himself, but for his assistant coaches. So I can see both sides of it, but I don't know definitively. I have not heard anything about numbers being discussed or anything like that. And if you were really in a contract negotiation, aren't some at least parameters of numbers being put out there? So I don't think it got that close.
How do you think Dak feels about McCarthy being gone, and how would you describe their relationship over the last 5 years?
Oh, they had a good relationship, but I just think that Dak's been in this thing for over nine seasons now. So it's not like Mike McCarthy was his first coach, and it's not like, you know, it's not like when you go to high school, you're the same coach the entire time, or he goes to Mississippi State and he's going to play for Dan Mullen. Like, you get in the NFL, and if you play long enough, you know that this is going to happen. And so I guess my thing is, I'm sure he's more used to this now just because of the fact that, well, Jason Garrett was his first head coach, and then they moved on from him. And then he had a play caller in Kellen Moore who he liked, and they moved on from him. And he liked Mike McCarthy. He spoke out about that multiple times over the past year about wanting to continue with Mike, but he also understands that this is a business. Obviously, it's a business that's paid Dak very well. But I don't think that there's anything to anybody that Dak would want him gone. I don't feel that's the case at all. But yeah.
Happy early birthday, John. As Sean Machado of The Athletic joins us here in the G-Bag Nation, do you think, I mean, they've talked a lot about continuity in the past. Now you don't have Mike McCarthy. It seemed like the defense, maybe they struggled early because you had a new defensive coordinator. Do you see Mike Zimmer and or even a Brian Schottenheimer or anybody else on the staff being serious consideration to become the new head coach to try and keep some continuity?
Not as a head coach, no. I would say
Hey, John, could you try moving just a little bit there with the cell connection? We're probably getting 90% of it. Yeah, that's good.
I would say that I can't see any of them being the head coach, but I can see a scenario where Jerry hires somebody to be, maybe it's an offensive coordinator type who hasn't been a head coach before, and I could see Jerry being like, well, what about pairing that person with Mike Zimmer as the DC? Because Mike Zimmer obviously is a veteran coach with a head coaching, you know, background, and that would be a great, you know, kind of sounding board for whoever this next coach is, who, whether it be, let's say, a Kellen Moore, let's say Joe Brady, somebody that's a more offensive mind, you'd want to pair them with a defensive coach who's got more experience. And so I think that would make sense. But in terms of a head coach, no, I firmly believe the head coach would be somebody that's not on the staff.
Do you expect Jason Witten to be on the coaching staff in some capacity?
I don't. I think that for Jason Witten, it would either be to be the head coach or it won't be on this staff. And the only reason I say that is because I feel like if you're the head coach and you're hired to have that job, you know, I mean, I guess if they go with a young guy, it's possible. But if you're, let's say, Ron Rivera or Pete Carroll or John Gruden, like, are you going to really want Jason Witten? You're just going to feel like all you're doing, you're just there to prep him to be the next head coach of the Cowboys. And maybe it's the Cowboys. It's dysfunctional. Maybe that ends up being part of the plan. I just talked myself into that right now with you guys on the air. So maybe that is the plan. Maybe you would get a Pete Carroll type, and then you'd bring in Jason Witten as the tight ends coach, and Jason Witten as the successor. I mean, with the Cowboys, you can't 100% rule that out.
John, do you expect them to have a couple of interviews, you know, with some guys that aren't in the playoffs, but then fully, like, interview your beloved Detroit Lions coaches between, you know, potentially the Super Bowl weekend and the, you know, NFC, the championship games, that off week?
I would hope so. I don't know how you're doing your due diligence if you're not interviewing one or both of those coordinators. I mean, Aaron Glenn with the Cowboys ties, Ben Johnson for what he's done for Jared Goff. I don't know how you couldn't look at that and go, man, what could he do over here, and how much could he help Dak? I mean, just what the perception of Jared Goff was 3 years ago to what it is now after working with Ben Johnson is night and day. To have to attach a first-round pick to Jared Goff to just get you to take him off of their hands, and then he's turned him into one of the top players, not just quarterbacks, top players in the NFL, that's crazy. And so to think that, I don't understand how you could do a coaching search and not include both of them in that.
Mike McCarthy was hired January 8th of that year, 2020. When do you think this hire gets made?
That's a really great question, because I don't think if I was sitting here with Jerry Jones and I handed him the phone, I don't think he could tell you definitively. Because I do think there's a part of Jerry that thought, there's a chance that we might keep going for another year or two with Mike McCarthy. And I think that's a big reason why you never heard any names leaked out in terms of Cowboys having interest, because I don't think that Jerry was 100% certain he'd be going in a coaching search right now. And so, by all means, they kick the tires, have conversations with Deion Sanders that obviously gets a lot of people talking, that makes a lot of sense. But I don't think they definitively have a plan. Like, they probably have a plan, but I don't know that it's an exact one right now. I think that they're trying to figure that thing out as they go. But you also got to keep going back to the fact that I think most organizations probably value head coach more than the Dallas Cowboys do. You know, when Jerry says, I can find 500 coaches that could win a Super Bowl with the 90s Cowboys, and then kind of repeats it the other day after the season finale about 500 coaches being at the Senior Bowl, I just don't get the sense that he's going to feel real pressure to try and make sure that he gets the guy that everybody wants. And so it could be next week. It could be in 3 weeks.
So many critics of this Cowboys front office say they'll never win because the front office undermines the coach's authority. From what you've witnessed, do you believe that? And then the follow-up would be, when Steven does take more control of the team, or Jerry Jr. or Charlotte or whoever's next, would it have a chance to be more of a normal dynamic?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I do think that Steven enjoys the media side of it. I do think he enjoys some of the things that his dad does, but I don't think that they're wired the same way. And so because of that, I just think that it'd be more likely that they would get a head coach with a bigger personality, somebody that I don't think Steven would mind if that person got all of the credit if the Cowboys were to get to a Super Bowl. Whereas with Jerry, there's always that part of me that I wonder if he really wants that, if he really wants a coach that, like a Parcells. And that's, again, why the Deion thing doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, because if any of those big personalities win, they're getting most of the credit. And I don't think Jerry wants – I think Jerry's still fighting to get another Super Bowl to where he can get credit for it. So it's going to have to be on his terms.
I agree with you, and I think a lot of Cowboy fans, and John, I wonder your thoughts, since how long you've been covering the team. There's somewhat of an anti-Jerry push, and I think other people are looking at what's gone on, and even from a national lens, that Jerry's starting to get more blame than he ever has before. You've got an Athletic poll out right now about hope and optimism, one of your questions there moving forward. Where do you think Cowboy fans are compared to other years, and does Jerry sense that?
I definitely think he senses it. I don't think there's any question about that. I think it's even to a point, I think it factored in to his response when he was on your guys' station talking to Sean and RJ. That just was not the Jerry Jones that I've been around the last 14 years to snap like that and respond the way he did. And so that to me was kind of, I felt like that he's feeling it. He's hearing it more. He's more defensive now because, let's be honest, there's more ways to hear it too. It's not just tickets. It's not just people that show up to Oxnard for training camp. I mean, social media has changed the game in terms of, it's not difficult to find out how the fan base feels. And I don't think there's any question that they're as frustrated, if not the most frustrated, that they've ever been since he's owned the team. Now, I will say it's hard for me to compare because I wasn't here in the late 80s and when he replaced Tom Landry. I'm sure there was a lot of dislike for him, but I'm sure it went away pretty quickly when they were winning Super Bowls. But right now, in terms of the last, this 29-year stretch without a Super Bowl, I believe that this is the most disliked and most upset that fans have been with Jerry Jones.
And that's why I think there is somewhat, maybe it's microscopic or an outside chance that Deion gets the gig, because he's got to get the fan base engaged in whatever way is possible. I think the team's going to be worse next year, John.
Yeah, that's possible. I just think it would come down to, does Jerry think that Deion can do the things he did at Colorado in the NFL? you know, and that's a big question because, you know, there's things that you just don't have to deal with when you're in college. I understand with NIL guys are getting paid and stuff like that. But at the NFL level, you got to deal with a lot of guys that are getting paid a lot more money than that. And there's only so much you can do as a head coach, because at the end of the day, the players are the ones that are getting the bulk of the salary and they're not going anywhere. So it's just kind of like, whether it's Deion or whoever else, like, their plan can't just be their plan. Their plan has to be something that fits Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons, because those guys aren't going anywhere. You know, it's not like college where you can just, especially right now, you can basically change that, the majority of that roster over from year to year with the transfer portal and NIL. I don't know that you can really do that in the NFL. And then the other part of it is, for a team that doesn't do much in free agency, I don't know where, like, the pull for Deion, it would really have that big of effect with players in terms of getting players to want to come to play for the Cowboys, like he's clearly gotten players to want to come play for Colorado. I don't know how much of a factor that would really be. And so I just don't know that – I don't know that you're getting the full Deion experience at the NFL level, whereas you can get that at the college level.
Are you in Detroit right now getting ready to watch the Lions whip the Commanders?
I'm not, but if they win on Saturday – I do have plans to be at the NFC Championship game in Detroit, and I would be very happy about being there.
Are you going? Would you go as a reporter for the free ticket, or as a fan to live it up?
Most certainly would not go as a reporter. I already got tickets with my brother and his wife. They're both diehard Lions fans, so that is the plan. So yes, it would be nice to see them have a victory on Saturday.
Will, best of luck to you, brother. And maybe we'd see you in New Orleans in that scenario. John Machota of The Athletic, all things Cowboys. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
No problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Salute. Yeah, there he is. You want to follow John on Twitter and, of course, read him on The Athletic.
Here we go. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, the return of Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Belt. This is the commercial-free expressway. We got Pepe firing up the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. However you are listening, whether it's the radio, the Odyssey app, you are appreciated. Okay. During one of his many Mike McCarthy tantrums during the course of the season.
Not a tantrum.
Bobby Belt would just blurt out, "You just wait. You just wait. Until Mike's not here anymore, and I'm going to let you know everything that happened. I'm going to unload the clip." And the other day, when we had Bobby on after the Mike McCarthy departure and the news of it, Bobby said, Thursday, 7:20, I'll finally do it. So we're calling this, good nickname by Bobby, the Mike McCarthy T. Take it away, sir.
Okay, so before we start, I want to just, like, get a couple things out of the way, because there's already been a lot of discussion from people who are anticipating, oh, this is going to be a certain thing, or, oh, you're going to get this here or there. First off, also, by the way, I'm letting anybody know who's listening right now who plans on texting me during this. My phone is going to be on the couch over there. I don't even want to, like, be distracted by it right now. So my phone's not next to me if you try to text me in the next 40 minutes while we're on the air.
I just saw him throw it.
So, first off, for those skeptics of what I'm about to say, and you're like, I'm tuning in to be proven wrong, if you're looking for Watergate recordings or anything like that, that's not going to be this segment, okay? And that's not how things typically work. This is not going to be, look, I have forensic evidence here of this happened or that happened. Just like when you listen to the way things broke down with the Jets, the way that that's explained is through, this is what a lot of trusted people through discussions and conversations have said over time. So that's one. Two, everything said here, there's been a lot that's been said or that I've heard over the course of 5 years. Everything said here is only the stuff that I've heard from multiple people. This is not going, none of this is just something I heard from one person. There's plenty I heard from just one person, and I'm not going to talk about this because I don't know. Multiple people gives it some veracity, I think. And a lot of this, by the way, has been re-verified this week of just, hey, I'm thinking about talking about this. The third thing and the last thing before we get started, the whole why now angle of just, well, why, where was this the last, you know, 5 years? And yeah. I'd said on Tuesday, whenever that was, I said on Tuesday that it wasn't productive before. I was not talking about it wasn't productive for me. I'm talking about these people who will talk to you about things, whether they're venting or they want to let you know things.
Yeah.
At whatever level they're at, they're saying it's not productive while we're sitting here trying to win to talk about these things. I don't necessarily want you to talk about it. I'm just talking to you about it right now.
And they're not going to talk to you anymore.
Right. And so it's more just a, hey, I want to vent about this, or, oh, this is what's going on, just so you have some context as to what's happening here. But I don't want you to just go spewing that anywhere.
Yeah.
And not while we're trying to win something. Eventually, there will be a time to talk about it, but I don't want you to talk about it until that time arrives.
My favorite response to that thought and notion, and I've tweeted a couple morons over the past few days, and they go, I don't get it. My favorite line is, you're right, you don't get it. Yeah, it's the same Jerry, Steven, why don't you cuss them out, people? You don't get it. Choppy's making T-shirts about Witten.
Witten waiting.
Mine is, if you don't get it, you don't get it.
Yeah, and I think also why now, because the full picture matters now. Like, we have a complete picture, and there's been a lot of discussion about Mike was done wrong, or he was put in an impossible position. And there are a lot of things about the job here in Dallas, and for Mike specifically, that he was put in a very difficult position. There's no doubt about that, and that has to be owned. There's been plenty of discussion about that, though. I don't think there's been nearly enough discussion about what does Mike have to own about how things went wrong here. There's a lot that was within his control that was out of his control in a lot of different instances. And I think the first thing to start with is 2020, when he gets hired, he had been out of the league for a year and a half or whatever it was.
Yeah, it was December or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Had no idea what was coming in March of 2020 in terms of just the limitations that would exist in a COVID NFL. But when he hires his staff, he hires, I think the number was, it was five or six assistants that he hired, like position coaches, full-time position coaches, and an assistant coach, had not been employed in the NFL the year before. It was considered by some of the time to be, are you hiring buddies here? Buddies who none of the NFL wanted to hire after it went poorly. There's one thing for us to take a chance on you. We're taking a chance on an entire staff or entire coaches that nobody had employed in the NFL last year. All right, but autonomy. Autonomy, do it. That's fine.
Yeah.
But there were just, it raised an eyebrow at the time for some people, just like, okay, we'll trust you. You're building a staff here, but just, all right, we're wondering, is this a desirable staff, or is there maybe some friend hires here? Even the guys who were employed the year before, Mike Nolan was brought in here as the defensive coordinator. There's a lot of discussion from people at the Saints who were telling people at the time, we're not exactly sad to see Mike Nolan leave as our linebackers coach.
But so, a lot of coaching is a buddy system.
Sure. There's,
you know what I mean? Bill Belichick is hiring his buddies.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, who's the guy that's hiring as the special team? Mike Pryfer?
Not rejecting that idea at all. Just setting up why certain decisions were taken out of his hand at some point.
Okay.
It was a lot of coaches who people just wondered, are these the right guys for the job? Whatever, fine. Do things your way. As much as it was like, well, Mike decided for continuity to retain Kellen Moore. Yes and no. I mean, a lot of that was, there was heavy influence of like, we really think you should keep Kellen Moore. In that process, Doug Nussmeier gets bumped up to quarterbacks coach with Kellen, or the previous year had been bumped up to quarterbacks coach, and he gets retained as part of that because just continuity's sake, the relationship that exists with Dak. They run into problems really quickly. The COVID era had been, you consistently would hear Mike and other people talk about, like, I was really only here for 4 years, or really this is year four here because year one didn't really count.
Yeah.
It was tough for a lot of people to just accept that because it's like, well, it's also year one for Ron Rivera and things have gotten better in Washington this year, or, oh, this has worked out. Why is this Zoom era, you know, Microsoft Teams meeting there so difficult for you guys specifically? And I think it raised questions of, obviously, there were challenges that existed, but were these challenges that existed amplified by the fact that you hired a bunch of coaches that people wondered if they should have been in the NFL anymore anyway? And did you make the right calls there and the right decisions? So August, they roll around into training camp, their weird modified training camp, and there's early tension between, I think, Kellen and Mike, because Mike has his own ideas about what he wants to do. Philosophically, they're not the same guy at all. They're not the same coach. And I think Mike had said previously he was never going to give up, offensive play calling again. So coming in here, doing that was not an evolution of just, oh, I've changed my mind again. He just wasn't getting play calling at the time. But he still wanted to influence it. And he still wanted to. We had that discussion when we said, if he comes back, is he going to have play calling? And if he has play calling, how much are they going to trust that he's going to keep his hands off of it? Because I think that that was a tension point for Kellen Moore to feel like, dude, you need to give me some space to do the things that we want to do here. All right. I know philosophically you don't agree with some things, but you need to give me autonomy. And so I think that created some natural tension where Kellen didn't always feel like he had the autonomy that he needed to have.
And real quick, I do think this is one of the problems here. Like, when you're bringing in, you can't just, like, when we did this show, Sean and I met like 2 days prior to doing the show. And it worked, but I mean, not at first. Like, at first, it was like the first show. I remember the first show. It was very like, it was awkward. Like, we didn't know how to play off each other yet.
Yeah.
Like, that is one problem here. Like, they want to force somebody on the coach.
Yeah.
And make it work out of thin air. It just doesn't do. That doesn't happen.
I agree. I don't blame Mike for being like, yeah, you're the coordinator, but I'm not going to just blindly give you all the power. I'm the head coach.
Right. But the ultimate authority in terms of just what gets done here is going to be the general manager. And so if the general manager has somebody in charge of play calling, well, Mike, you're overstepping bounds now. You're overstepping directives at this point. And you understood the terms of it when you got here. You wanted to get here under certain terms. I will say, by the way, as much as it's been laughed off or pushed off, the whole I didn't watch every play of the 2019 season that was made there. There were a couple people that with the Cowboys that didn't sit well with. Not like clearly.
Well, that's all fault for believing it.
Not everyone laughed it off.
Not believing it. It's the they felt a little bit like, understand it's a joke. You're kind of making a mockery of this though on your very first time talking to people. We don't love that. And so I think that that didn't necessarily set a great tone. September rolls around. They are getting run in some of these games. Even the first game they won against Atlanta, that was one where
the watermelon kick.
That was the watermelon kick, and they were down big. I mean, they were very close to being 0-4 to start the season. And not just 0-4, giving up historic numbers on defense, which was Mike Nolan. And was a Mike Nolan, you know, was a Mike McCarthy decision, a Mike McCarthy hire. You started hearing about some instability, specifically after Dak went down. Because when Dak went down with the injury, that's when Jane's report comes out in October that says two separate players tell her coaching staff's bad. Just, it's not good. And there were some issues keeping everybody under control, especially once Dak was out and rehabbing, because Dak is such an important figure in the locker room and helping settle everything. It felt like there was a little bit of control issues. There were a lot of issues with Everson Griffin at the time. There were a lot of issues with Alden Smith at the time. Those were sincere problems that they felt like there was a void of just like, where's the leadership here? Who's really in charge? Who's running things? And it got to the point that, we're not going to play the clip, but I'll say it. There was the very famous Hayden Hurst clip with Dak Prescott, where he approaches him after the game mic'd up and he says, you know, hey, I respect what you said about mental health, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Not blah, 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 but you know what I'm saying. The very cut before that, the Atlanta Falcons unintentionally left on the editing room floor. In fact, you know what? We will play it. I don't care because I don't want people to think I'm just making up this cut. The Falcons accidentally left on the editing room floor or didn't leave on the editing room floor. Brandon Carr, a former teammate of Hayden Hurst, going up and talking to him afterwards, where Brandon Carr, as you will hear in this clip, and it's a little difficult here, so I'm going to tell you what he says in advance, where he's catching up with Hayden Hurst, and he says, the coaches are S. Play, Peyton, this is clip one.
What's up, boy?
So good to see you, man.
Likewise.
How you doing?
I'm trying to hang in there. I'm like, yeah, the coaches.
I love
having
it, man.
A good time, bro.
Good to see you, man.
And they couldn't, the Falcons, they didn't hear what was said. They heard S word, but there was, I don't know. Okay, well, we got to bleep that. I'm not sure what else was said. It was something, though, as soon as attention was brought to that, people kind of circled back. That disappeared from the Falcons website. I don't think that mic'd up segment exists on the Falcons website anymore. You can find it on YouTube repurposed, but it doesn't exist there anymore. So clearly there was some discontent in the locker room with the way the coaching staff was being handled. All of that leads to also, that you've got the issue in November when Andy Dalton gets knocked down in Washington and nobody replies to John Bostic and what he did. There's some sense from people in the Cowboys, I think, that that's a leadership issue. That's young players out there, but you guys have clearly, this coaching staff has not set the right tone or culture or anything else. A lot of these, I think, can be explained away as first year, lack of communication, things like that. But it sets the tone for then they get into 2021, and I think a lot of people with the Cowboys felt like, all right, Mike, we did it your way with some of these staff hires. some of this is going to be our recommendation now, because this didn't work out the way it needed to. The Cowboys brass really pushes for Dan Quinn, not Mike McCarthy. That's a hire that Mike McCarthy, to be clear, gets along with Dan Quinn, likes Dan Quinn. Those are all true things. Doesn't dislike Dan Quinn at all. Dan Quinn was a figure that, like when we talk about the Jason Witten thing here, Dan Quinn was a big figure hanging over Mike McCarthy's shoulder for 3 years.
Yeah.
That was not media narrative. That was a very real thing that Mike McCarthy...
Remember when McCarthy called the Rich Eisen show?
Yeah.
But that was really bad by Jerry. Jerry was like acting Senior like Bowl. Dan Quinn could just take over the job.
Yeah, and that was Senior Bowl, I think the year after. It was after his first year here where he said, yeah, Dan would be a great coach of the Dallas Cowboys. But that's something where the Cowboys said, look, your defensive coordinator, Buddy Hire, that the Saints were apparently happy letting leave as their linebackers coach, that didn't work out. So you're taking on Dan Quinn. I don't care if that's uncomfortable for you. We're trying to win games here. And that's what's going to happen. And so I think that became I know that became a tension issue that Mike expressed to people, where he would say that he was hearing all that noise and that was distracting for him, and that he didn't like necessarily having somebody of Dan Quinn's prominence who could easily take over his job being oversold. I think that existed with Zimmer. I think when Zimmer got hired here, I don't know how much Mike loved that idea.
Zimmer was not his call.
No, and you can hear Zimmer in some of the interviews this offseason.
Do you know who Mike wanted?
No, well, I don't know.
Did they go to D.C.?
I don't think that he... I think that there's somebody on staff he probably could have elevated. That I don't know. I can't say with certainty who he would have wanted.
Because it sounds like him and Zim get along now.
Yeah, and again, I don't think he has any personal issues with these guys.
Yeah.
I think it's more just what they represent to his own job.
Sure.
That created a tension point when coupled with Kellen Moore. There's two of his coordinators now that essentially run both sides of the ball. He's a CEO, just kind of supposed to oversee culture. And he's honestly, a lot of people feel like too distracted to oversee culture. He's too distracted by his assistant coaches to effectively oversee what's happening with the culture here. And he's too hyper aware of what's being discussed. He has people in his circle that will report back to him on what's being said in the media and what the speculation is and what those things that exist. And that's not a healthy place to be. Now, you can make the argument, as I'm sure a lot of people would, well, that's the front office's fault for putting him in that unhealthy position. Regardless of that, he agreed to the terms of the deal, understanding that's what the offensive coordinator position was. And then the other stuff he was given autonomy over, he really didn't handle very well in terms of making those coaching hires.
But isn't all this further the discussion that the organization is not going to be able to get the coach that we want because they operate in this way where they're like, no, you're taking this, you're taking that. It's the same thing. It's the same thing with Witten. Same thing with Garrett, with Wade Phillips. Why would you want to coach here?
I mean, it's the Dallas Cowboys. Like, at the end of the day, you can say whatever you want. It is still the Dallas Cowboys. And I know you're asking these questions that are fun debate topics. The reality is it's the Dallas Cowboys. People want to coach here regardless of what the terms are oftentimes.
I mean,
most coaches want to coach here. There are big-name coaches now who there's chatter about how they think. It's like the Sean Payton thing. Sean Payton knew how things operated here. Yeah. Sean Payton wants to run things all his way, knows he would not be able to do that in Dallas, and still wanted to be here because it's the Dallas Cowboys and it matters. There's an aura that exists here. The Quinn issue became something where there's just this natural tension that exists to the point where Dan Quinn had intimated people, it was my understanding, had intimated to people after a year or two, was just like, should I go? Like this feels uncomfortable for everybody. Should I just go? But I think he liked being here in Dallas. I think he liked working with Mike McCarthy on stuff outside of just that unusual factor. Now, over the course of that season, the 21 season, Mike McCarthy really sours on Amari Cooper. And I think he felt like Amari Cooper was probably one of the, in fact, definitely, he felt like Amari Cooper was one of the bad apples who was spoiling the locker room for him. That he felt like Cooper and a couple other players who I've heard names, but not consistently enough to comfortably say. I've heard consistently Cooper was one that he thought was spoiling the locker for him.
In what regard? What way? Because we just hear, free thinker. There's the COVID aspect.
It was
practicing.
And that's, Mike McCarthy was very frustrated that he would never practice. That was something that irritated him, that he'd show up for game day, but he wouldn't practice necessarily because of bumps and bruises and different things like that. The Cooper thing, it wasn't like there was, hey, I've caught you talking about this or I've heard you talking about this. he just knew that he had natural tension with Amari, as a lot of people did, because Amari's a really smart guy and needs, it's like, you need to explain the logic to me of everything.
Yes.
And a lot of people view that as defiance, and, yeah, and it caused some issues with Sanjay Law, the old receivers coach, that way.
Sanjay Law.
Yeah, and that was a tense point. In fact, in 2019, when he played those three snaps against the Jets and went out, that was a big problem for the Cowboys, where they were like, your relationship with your receivers coach can't be so bad that there's a lack of communication to even tell us how hurt you are or to how much this is bugging you. That's a problem, which they're right. That they couldn't get to that point. But Mike McCarthy, I think, always felt like Amari Cooper was part of things that would leak out about people being upset. And so because of that a lot of times there wasn't anything that definitively pointed that. It was an assumption. He just assumed that was one of the people that was really stirring things up for him. And that feedback, that critical feedback of Amari Cooper to the front office about his practice habits, about other, you know, how much does he care, that carried over to, I think, the front office, and that influenced their opinions on him, to where when they traded Amari Cooper, there were a lot of people in the locker room who felt like this is Mike, not necessarily pulling the trigger, but Mike is the one who was in their ear that led to them doing this. And it caused some frustration for a lot of guys. Like, I talked directly to players who had said that they were frustrated that they felt like Mike, after the trade, walked around kind of like, yeah, that's crazy that we traded Amari. I don't know why they did it either.
A little disingenuous.
And some guy, that didn't sit well with some players, where they felt like,
You know why.
If you feel that way, fine, feel that way. But, like, own it when it happens. Yeah. Don't walk away from it.
Right.
And that, again, that's another tension point where it's like, okay, you seem paranoid about our assistant coaches. You seem paranoid about guys in the locker room. Are we totally focused on football here? Are we totally locked in? And that's where, when you start asking questions, did you get the most out of these 12-5 teams? And it's a worthwhile question to say, does Mike McCarthy get credit for being able to oversee something that, even with those ebbs and flows and those waves, still won 12 games? Is that a credit to him? Or then you ask the other side of that question, or does that mean they were limited to 12-win team? Could they have been better? Does that explain some of the flat performances? Does that explain why there were times as a group they looked like they didn't show up? Were they totally locked in all the time? And I think that when you look at, after that 21 season ended, where they went 12-5, they had the big time disappointment at the end of the year with San Francisco. That was the Dak scramble game where they were at home and just got handled. That offseason, there started to be more growing tension between staff, player, those sort of things. They draft Tyler Smith that year, and that is something that Joe Philbin, the offensive line coach, never wanted. Joe Philbin's not a Tyler Smith fan.
You said that repeatedly.
Didn't trust him. Joe Philbin also was not a fan of Connor McGovern, who was here. Joe Philbin didn't think that Connor McGovern was a good enough mental processor to play on the offensive line. When Tyron Smith goes down in training camp of 22, and it's got to be Tyler Smith and Connor McGovern on the left side of the line, Joe Philbin didn't want them handling any of their normal checks or responsibilities at the offensive line. He felt like, nope, they're not capable of doing that. We need to have Dak do it. Dak's got to be able to do that. I think Dak and Kellen both felt like, these guys are ready. We're paying these guys to do this job. They need to be out able to do their job. And so that creates a natural back and forth where you're petitioning to the head coach to say, make a call here. Who are you siding with? And there was an inclination to side with Philbin, and I think that created some tension where it's like, all right, head down, we'll go to work. But some of our communication issues that exist, they're only going to get worse if we're just throwing more on Dak's plate and taking things away from this guy, and half the line's able to do this. And it caused greater issues, and I think greater tension, just like, why can't we just get on the same page here? Why can't we trust guys to do what they're supposed to do? 22 goes long. You have the interception issues where Dak throws those 15 while he was out hurt. He came back late in the season. He threw 15 interceptions. You remember there's the big discussion about option routes at the time.
Yeah.
Again, very publicly, a lot of this stuff, it feels like when people go, there's never been any tension. Just logically think about things. When Mike McCarthy said he wanted to take option routes out of the playbook, Dak went in front of the media publicly and said, when was asked, do you just take those out of the game plan? He said, bleep no.
Right.
And said, here's all the time. You don't see the times they hit. There's this. That'd be ridiculous to take these out of the game plan. That right there, do you think that if there's a very public, Dak, especially who is the politician who is very measured, if there's a public disagreement like that, I think it's silly to imagine that there's no tension there. Like I mean, you don't have to listen to me and when I say that people say that there was some tension between them, where you've got, man, you're not listening to me here. I've got coaches that I'm close with that you are clearly tense with. You're pushing out a guy who was an expert at option routes and reading the same thing that Dak was reading. And Amari Cooper, he's gone now. And feeling like it's something that's almost a little unsaid or inferred that these interceptions are on me rather than communication issues that you know exist because of things that maybe you didn't have a handle on.
Okay.
And I think that would bleed out at times. In fact, it was after the season.
Because I always thought that was insulting towards a quarterback. It's like, you're not capable of option routes. We need to simplify it. You know, it's like not graduating to the next level. That's the way I always viewed it.
Yeah. And I think that clearly, I don't have to say I think it was, or I was told it was. You guys publicly know those quotes are on the record. It was frustrating to Dak that they were talking about that.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was, again, I think there was an inference that more of these interceptions were on him than what the reality was, which is like internally they all know that it was miscommunication with receivers and reading different things. And the following offseason, leading into the 23 season, there was actually a talk at OTAs, and this is clip two, where you can hear Dak is not totally happy with the way his interceptions have been represented.
Mike told us early in the offseason that you guys went over every interception last 3 years. What did you learn, and how does this offense help you, or what they're doing help?
Yeah, he didn't quite say that the right way. That wasn't all that what happened, you know what I mean? Okay. It wasn't quite that, you know?
Dak's very measured. Dak and Dak, I don't think, is going to throw anybody under the bus. And I think Dak has been, I know everybody thinks I'm biased with him, but like I feel about him the way I do because I like seen what he's done over the course of his career here, and he's an all-world leader. For him to be as measured as he is and to represent, you know, a couple different times, no, we shouldn't take those out of the playbook despite what Mike said. No, Mike didn't represent that the right way.
That's that really not
the
way loud this, coming from Dak.
That matters. And I think a lot of people have a tendency when they hear him in pockets just dismiss and go, you're reading too much into it. You see a complete picture here and you start putting them together. And I think you can see, all right, some of this chatter that exists coupled with this is enough to say that's smoking gun and enough evidence if you don't believe what is out there being said. After the 22 season, the Cowboys move on from Mike, or the Cowboys don't move on from Mike McCarthy. There's been some misinformation there. People have said consistently Kellen Moore was fired, that Mike decided to go out his own way. That is not the case. Kellen Moore left. 100% it was Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore wanted out. There was the very famous press conference after the season where Mike McCarthy said, everybody's under evaluation. You know, I don't want to get into anybody when he's being asked about Kellen Moore's future. It had already been determined Kellen Moore was coming back. Kellen Moore did not appreciate a public questioning of his being evaluated when they knew he was coming back. And I think that is where you see some of the tension that exists. And Kellen was like, you know, this has been a tough 3 years anyway, where I felt like I haven't been able to do the things that I want to do. We haven't been able to trust certain guys on the offensive line the way that I want to. And now I'm being publicly speculated. I think it's time. And
this is part of the reason that you and others are saying there'd have to be a little mending of fences.
Yeah, and I don't think
here.
I don't think it's irreparable. I think you can. It's just, yeah, you've got to. Hey, yeah, that kind of was awkward
messy
on the way out.
Yeah.
And that didn't end well. And around this time, not only do you have the change of Kellen going out, it felt like there were some people in the organization, I think, felt like there was some tit for tat back and forth coaching moves. So Rob Davis, who was an assistant coach here, who wasn't really a coach, a lot of players viewed Rob Davis as you're the spy in the locker room to watch after us and report back to coach some of these things that he seems a little paranoid about.
The mole.
And through that, Rob Davis was let go, not by Mike McCarthy. And I think Mike McCarthy, then you started seeing some of these, remember, we're like, why is George Edwards being fired when he's so well thought of? Why is K. Kellen left? Why is Doug Nussmeier being let go? It felt like there was a little bit of, all right, you let my guy go, I'm letting this guy go. And it became a little petty. And I think that's what then leads to, you get to 2023 and you enter that season and there's already a lot of tension that exists because of the way things ended with a couple different coaches and the way things have gone with personnel. And then when you go forward with the offense the way you did and the struggles they had the first 5 weeks of the season, and we've talked about it, we've inferred it, and we've talked about it before. After the San Francisco game, there was a lot of pushback from players on the offense, Dak, CD, others, of just like, these concepts aren't working. These things that we're doing aren't working. And again, there are two ways to view it. A lot of people want to give Mike McCarthy credit, I think, for saying, I'm going to hands off, trust to you guys. Yeah, I'm going to scrap it. All right, fine. I'm going to trust you guys. And I think, by the way, I want to be clear, because this is something that got mixed up. By the end of 23, and then definitely by the end of 24, Dak and Mike McCarthy were on great terms. Just like Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy seem to be on great terms now. They were not always. It's the same sort of thing. And that's a relevant part of the story, too. Why were there struggles along the way? Why did they feel like they underperformed in big moments at times? I think chemistry can explain some of this, where you go, all right, there were clearly some tension points here that had they been smoothed over earlier, had there not been some insecurities about other coaches or about what a player might have been doing, or those insecurities not existing, you might maybe don't come out so flat against San Francisco in that 21 game. Maybe you don't have these flat performances at random points during the season. You don't have the poor communication, because those things would have been ironed out. But they have the pushback. Dak really takes command of the offense after the bye week last year and was in a lot of control. Babe has talked a little bit, and I don't want to speak for Babe and say Babe said, but I think if you've heard Babe talk about this, you can hear Babe talking about, yeah, I think that there was some, he called it on the air with us, a come to Mike meeting.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, that was, there was a point to air things out a little bit and just say, let's clear some things up. In fact, I think there was an interesting cut. And I'm not saying this is definitely connected, but I just think this is an interesting cut. This is clip three, Peyton. This was after the San Francisco game this year, where CD seemed pretty frustrated. And I want you to listen to this with the context of there was pushback in 23 about the offense after the San Francisco game. And then listen to this clip from CD earlier this year.
Last year, we talked about this after the San Francisco game, and you had maybe the best stretch of your career. How do you look back at that and maybe channel that into similar?
I plan on doing it again.
What is
you got to see his face, too.
What does that mean? Realistically, let's say somebody thinks I'm making all of this up, which I think there's been enough inference from other people that clearly there was pushback, and you can see on tape offense changed. Let's say that you don't believe that, though. Then what does that answer mean? What does a chuckle and a log, I plan on doing it again? What does that mean? Yeah. Like, I mean, I think realistically you can connect those dots. So by 24, things, when he turned over trust to the offense finally in 23 to the players, and players felt like, all right, we've got trust here. I think relationships were built, fences were mended, relationships got stronger. And that's where, when people say, all these public comments, yes, these public comments after a year and a half of trust kind of being rebuilt. But there's 3.5 to 4 years here where Mike owns a big hand of things falling short because there wasn't trust, there wasn't good communication, and a lot of times people felt like this fell back on Mike. Again, there are more specifics that can probably be out there that people wouldn't feel comfortable getting into or whatever else. And like I said, at the end of the day, if you want just the final note on it, the final note is they did trust each other and they did like each other, and everybody...
You talking about Dak?
Dak, Mike, players in general. I think players pretty much universally liked Mike at the end. But to say there was no tension along the way is not accurate. And specifically to say, all right, they could have made nice in 24 or had great relationships with each other. The fact is, from 21 to 23, there was a lot of tension with this team was falling short that felt like it could have been repaired had, obviously, if the front office does things a little differently. There's a big hand of things that were within Mike's control that were oftentimes out of control that I think led to a lot of disappointments that you see, and why ultimately it's like a reset was probably valuable, even if everybody had made nice at this point.
All right. I think it's time for you and I to react to all of that.
Sure.
Let's cross-examine Bobby Roberto Belt along with the Tolos next on Sean and RJ.